I this is all I think about. I mean, truly, like with my courses in music ed tech, and like I'm always pushing people like think different. Again, technology is an innovation. It's not something that plugs in or has a battery. It is an innovation that allows us to do something that was never before possible.
Hey teachers, it's Tim Topham here and welcome back to another episode of the Topcast. Now, if you've ever been looking online for music notation software, you'll probably have realized that there are a lot of options out there right now. And today we're going to unpack one of my favorites and one of the most popular out there. It's all about Noteflight. And the person I've decided to bring along for the ride is one of the people who knows this program the best. His name's John Malinczak, and he's actually at Hal Leonard. He's one of the VPs at Hal Leonard. We'll find out a little bit more about that in a moment. But Noteflight, yes, it's a Hal Leonard company, and John is one of the people in charge of overseeing how it all works. And the reason I wanted to bring this episode to you was because one of our members was recently talking very, very fondly about Noteflight Learn, which we're going to talk about what that actually is and how it works and how it can be useful to you. But I often hear that members are using software or tools or whatever it is, sheet music for that matter. I love bringing it to all of you guys to learn from and grow from. And I do hope today's interview with John and the software that we'll be talking about will pique your interest and hopefully give you some options for how you could use this software in your own studio. As always, our show notes and full transcript are available over at topmusic.co/episode-259. That's topmusic.co/episode-259. My guest today, John Malinczak, offers an extensive range of experiences in music education and the music industry and is a frequent national clinician. John is currently Vice President of Music Education and Technology for Hal Leonard, and he's past President of the Technology Institute of Music Educators. John also teaches online graduate courses at Vanderbilt College and Boston University Online, and is a Google Level 2 Certified Educator. Mr. Malinczak is a passionate advocate for music education and technology, serving on the NAM State Advocacy Coalition and the NAFME Advocacy Leadership Force, and is Advocacy Chairman for the Massachusetts Music Educators Association. He holds an undergrad degree in music education and graduate degrees in both music performance and educational leadership. Welcome to the show, John Malinczak.
Great to be here.
So your current role, it sounds very grand, Vice President, Music Education and Technology at Hal Leonard. what does that role entail on a day-to-day basis?
Great question. You know, it's a new role for Hal Leonard. It's a new role for me since February. But really what it entails day-to-day is I oversee the Noteflight business, the Essential Elements Music Class, Essential Elements Interactive, any of our education technology components, but also have, you know, a broad overview of what's going on in music ed, what Hal Leonard products can serve music ed, relationships to school districts, school bid, some projects worldwide that we're working on in different markets. So yeah, it's a little bit of everything. It's a lot of emails.
I don't have a feeling. Well, look, I'm glad that you mentioned Noteflight because I want to dig into that a little bit later. And one of our members was actually just talking up Noteflight and Noteflight Learn in particular. So we're going to unpack a little bit about that and how that can help teachers a bit later. But I'm actually really keen. Keen to learn a bit more about you. You've had an incredibly varied career coming into this role. And so I wondered if you could just take us back to, I think, am I right in thinking you were a trumpeter originally? How did your musical journey start?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's a great story. So trumpet player. I grew up in Virginia. And, you know, I was that music kid that always wanted to be a band director. I wanted to be my high school band director. Like that's
really, that's what pretty, I reckon that's pretty rare for a child to want to be a band director.
Yeah, it, but you know, I am that kid that like music was what got me going. Like music was the thing I had social experience in school. Like music is where I had my friends. I was like the band nerd of all band nerds, like roll stepping with your lunch tray to not spill your milk, like total like marching band nerd, like literally every band nerdy get to school an hour early and waiting in the band hallway until the band director gets there and be like, oh, can I just practice my instrument or get to the hanging in the band room after school, missing the bus. I was that kid, okay? Like right. Every stereotype you can imagine. So I went straight to music education and straight to a master's in trumpet. I was tooting my horn a lot. Went to Louisiana and LSU and started playing there. And then I started teaching private school, or teaching at a private school, just to get a, you know, the job. And I just loved, I love teaching students. And at the time, this was like late 2000s, there was this kind of push for like music education technology. And like our school got a bunch of MacBooks. And so I was like, oh, we could download like the free version of Finale. And then we could get like some, you know, I had a copy of a Cubase that I was like, you know, as long as you have the code Cubase on the CD, you can install it on everything. I shouldn't say that, you know, like.
Do you remember the days when you used to have like a physical dongle sometimes for security?
Absolutely. And like, yeah, I did have the dongle for Cubase. Actually, that was the, it would boot up and like run basic. And then I have to plug the dongle in for the license to make it run full.
That's right.
Yeah. So I started a music tech program because I just thought it was cool. I did recording in college, you know, like paid the bills, you know, print CDs in my dorm room, like, you know, and like selling them for concerts in schools and doing audio editing for like recitals and competition CDs. I got really good at like, fascinated by audio and how like technology and music and sound came together. So that's what I did for fun. So yeah, I just started teaching, taught 6 years, went back and did another degree in education leadership, and you know, wanted to be like, oh, I could do arts administration or be a school superintendent or something like that. And did some stuff in the State Department in that world, and everything kind of collided at like just gigging, playing music, and realizing these folks at PreSonus had these amazing products. And I was talking to them and living, they were based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Not a lot of, you know, top 20 pro audio companies based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. But here's PreSonus. So I went over and talked to them one day. It's like, hey, I'm teaching music technology and I wrote this curriculum and it's cool. And like your products are perfect. And teachers are all struggling to like piecemeal everything together. But you have these awesome things that work Mac or PC, blah, 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 blah. And I thought I was going in to get free stuff. You know, like I was the guy that comes to me all the time now. It's like, hey man, like I could do this in my program. If you just give me a thing for free, I could be like your number one top fan, whatever. And I went home, talked to my wife. She's like, how'd it go? Did you get free stuff? I said, I think I got a job. I don't know. Is there like, come talk to me again. I mean, I walked in just running my mouth one day and I was there for 2.5 hours. I was in the CEO's office within 30 minutes. Or like I was a specimen. Like, wait, will you? They apparently they were having this big strategic meeting about education, and I just happened to knock on the freaking door.
That's amazing. So, just for people who don't know PreSonus, what do they make, or what did they do?
Oh my gosh, PreSonus, they are an audio company. They do interfaces. They do mixers. They just have the Studio Live mixer series. Really revolutionary, and one of the first trailblazers in iPad and software and hardware connections. They do Studio One software. And gosh, they've expanded into studio monitors and pro speakers. They do a range of stuff now.
Mm. It's actually a really interesting correlation to my own journey, because after I studied, finished year 12 here, high school, I went and did a music, Bachelor of Music course, and my specialty or my major was audio engineering and computer music. And that was back in, I'm going to age myself, 98 I finished. And that was still like, we were just on the tail end of part of our course being about, you had to do some reel to reel cutting together in audio engineering.
Like reel cuts.
Yeah,
cut and paste.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have to do it, but like the previous couple of years ago before that, like all the gear was still in the recording studio. I was really happy I didn't have to do that. It sounds like, and I used to nerd out on all the gear and the audio recording stuff. So I totally understand you can get swept away by it. And it can be a very expensive hobby as well.
Oh, for sure. But, you know, I think we both lived at the same time of like, I had the 4-track little Tascam cassette tape where you could like do like four tracks on a cassette. And then like the mini disc, do you remember that? Like
this
battery would last like 1 hour. You have a little disc and you put them in and like they gave it never close right. But and like little, I was recording with that. And then like plugging that into like the, you know, the first laptop that you ordered your custom laptop off Dell.com. You got to build it for you, you know, like, and then now everything's, you know, digital, but we got to see all of that, you know, like I made mixtapes. No one, kids don't know what a mixtape is these days.
Yep. Do you remember Laserdiscs? My lecturers used to have these massive, great, they were the size of LP records. And these, I can't even remember what, I think it was just a high capacity CD kind of technology, but they were.
I remember, I've seen them.
Yeah, there you go. They lasted Didn't last very long.
What are the days of like CDR minus, CDR plus, CDRW? Is it finalizing? I did all this work. It's not finalizing. What do you get in finalizing? Failed. Oh my God. Like all the technologies you've had for transferring music. It's fascinating though, right?
I know,
and so
I know.
It's so much fun. But so Presonus was great. And it was for me, it was a wonderful time because I knew really nothing about the music industry. And the way an idea goes from conception to a listener's, you know, ears and all the pieces that have to happen at the National Association of Music Merchants, NAM, and all the players in the industry and distribution and retail and manufacturing, engineering, software. I don't know any of that. I knew education. So this great moment that I'm sitting in the dear friend of mine's in the VP of Presonus's office. We did like every Wednesday, I'd leave out of school early. And I'd go sit with him. We talked for 2 hours until we finally talked ourselves into a job. And we're sitting there. We're having one of our Wednesday chats. And he's like, write up a bunch of stuff. Now, I came from academia. So I'd write 6 pages in 10 minutes. I'm like, here's a 6-page document explaining everything I'm going to do. You know, in the business world, it's like 3 bullets. Are you kidding me? I can't read 3 bullets. You know, but so I wrote this big document. He's reading through it. He looks at me. He says, what's a rubric? And I'd read this whole
rubric,
curriculum and
it,
rubric. Yeah, and instruction. And he just never heard the term before. But then he starts talking to me about channel manager and sales margin. I said, what's a channel manager? And we weren't speaking the same language. And neither of us knew what either of us were talking about, but we knew we had to take a risk. So they hired me. I showed up on the first day with no job description. And we figured it out. It was so fun. We tried stuff and made product bundles. We had, you know, marching bands using our gear. We had schools teaching from like elementary to middle to high. We did curriculums for the big, like the SAE institutes. It was like such a journey. Along the way, Hal Leonard was one of our best partners, right? Hal Leonard through distribution, through having curriculums. We did some books with some different authors. And I would say, hey, I'll give you all the Presonus images for free. So our products show up in all the books, not coincidentally, right? But, you know, so here, don't worry. So it's branding, free branding, right? So we did all kinds of cool stuff like that and had to go write some curriculum around our solutions. And I just really got to know the folks at Hal Leonard, and they're phenomenal. And so, you know, it was time for me to make a decision. And Hal Leonard had an offering at this company called No Flight that they'd acquired in 2014. I remember when I just started Presonus, I saw the press release that Hal Leonard had bought NoteFlight. I was like, oh my gosh, Hal Leonard's a serious competitor in this tech space. We got to watch out. I remember that moment. And then the irony of me now being over that is crazy. Mm. But yeah, and then it just worked out to be in, you know, go to Hal Leonard, go to NoteFlight. I moved to Boston, worked at NoteFlight and ended up taking over the company in 2017. And now I'm where I am today. I'm sure there's a lot of details in the middle, but.
It's a really interesting. I find journeys of people, particularly in the music industry, fascinating because we have often have these portfolio careers. There's so many points in everyone's lives where you could take just about any one of those directions and go down those paths. And I think it's fascinating how connections you make and the networking you do, and also a bit of luck sometimes and being in the right place at the right time, steers the direction of your career. And it certainly seems like that's been the case for you. Do you miss education? I know you're still working in education, but in the schools, that kind of area, or not really?
Oh man, that's a great one. Also add to your list is mentors. I always say like I'm where I am because of mentors and mistakes. There are a few people that I would never had of opera. Like that VP at Presonus gave me a chance. And if he hadn't taken a risk on me, none of this, you know, like there's a series of people that I would thank. Maybe one day if I win an award, I'll read my list for my suit pocket. But it's mentors, right? You just got to give people chances and make a lot of mistakes and don't do that again. So but missing education, I'll tell you, you know, all I wanted to be was that band director, right? And inside that's like that band director boy is in here. And I swear to you, man, for a long time, when I first left teaching, it was so hard. And I was to the point where my principal had to say, John, you quit the job, leave. I was like, I'll come back and help. I'll come to all the school programs. I'll still come after school and visit because I could not let it go. And she had to like almost like give me a seat. Because I wouldn't let it go. But I made a commitment to myself. I said, I'm never going to stop teaching. So since that switch in 2013, I have taught a course at university level ever since. I teach 2 to 3 courses now a semester, grad courses on music technology and curriculum. And I haven't stopped because if I feel like if I stop teaching, I'm done. Teaching to me is like a shark swimming. Like I have to swim to breathe.
So now, I know you've only moved over to Howl. When did you start working at Howl? I know you've changed jobs just in the last bit, about February this year. How long have you been there all
right? Right, but I consider myself being at Howl Leonard since August of 2015. Even when I started Note Flight, we were a Howl Leonard company. It's a Howl Leonard role. We're all Howl Leonard employees. And my big responsibility was to get Note Flight and Howl to really help work together and to drive Note Flight's, you know, product roadmap to serve larger needs. And so 6 years at Howl.
Yeah, okay. Just before we dive into Note Flight, I'm keen to know, how have publishing companies like Howl Leonard had to adjust over these last 18 months? Because I know some publishers have had a pretty rough time. Now, Howl is huge. It's a massive organization. But I imagine there's been some challenges along the way during this pandemic.
Yes, it is. What do we say? We had to pivot and adapt in unprecedented times. Is that the phrase of 2020?
Everything's unprecedented.
Yeah, exactly, right? Oh, man. It's a hard time for music publishing, and we really feel for some of our, you know, colleagues and other partners in the industry that are strictly music publishers, and some of the smaller publishers that are just very focused on school and education. I mean, I can just not disclose anything confidential. Band, orchestra, and choral sales tanked in 2020.
Right.
No one was buying that. All that music, all that money shifted to education technology for online learning. And so a lot of publishers struggled in that. And our divisions, obviously. But luckily for Howl Leonard, we have great music technology. So where one went down, Note Flight had a record year where we couldn't even keep up with the demand. It was like laughable how fast it was coming in. And it was just a phenomenal, like it almost was like some silver lining of the pandemic. Like, we have something that's going to help people connect with their students at home, and that's super awesome. And some of our other online products soared as well, so that helped. I mean, all in all, Howl Leonard also distributes a lot of technology. We're a major, and it's something we don't talk about externally very often, but one of our larger areas where we do distribute not only, you know, ink on paper, we distribute about 64 lines of music technology across the US and even, you know, some in Australia and other players. So we are a distributor for retailers. And it's
I didn't know that.
Something that's sort of evolved.
Are you talking microphones or mixes or, you know, that kind of technology?
Yeah, all that. I mean,
oh, there you go. Didn't know that.
That's how I met. I mean, Presonus needed a distributor to get into the music ed space. Like, you know, the average, you know, band and orchestra music retailer wasn't buying Pro Audio, you know, unless you get a store that does both. So like, Howl Leonard serves those so strong. So Howl Leonard just kind of evolved into a distributor. It's a great strong line for us. And again, it's strictly B2B. It's strictly distributed. We have the massive warehouse. We have an incredibly efficient shipping system to send boxes of paper everywhere. So we can send boxes of paper and a mixer and a USB mic and a keyboard and a ukulele and a drum set on the same pallet, yeah. You know?
Makes sense. So let's get into Note Flight. I did want to sort of unpack this a little bit because, there's a lot of competition out there. Off the top of my head, Finale, Sibelius, Flat, weird name, MuseScore, ScoreCloud, Dorico. Like, I realize that you didn't develop this from scratch, but how have you been able to compete when there's just so much out there? Is there, what would you say sets Note Flight apart?
You make a great point because there are lots of music notation competitors out there, right? And again, we all get together in a little hotel suite at NAMM and hang out. So like, this industry is incredibly friendly. Like, we literally, all the people from Finale, Sibelius, Dorico, like MuseScore, we have a little like NAMM hang. And so it's like, it's crazy. We talk about XML code. Oh yeah, no, it's like super nerdy. Everything you would expect. But I will tell you that two things, right? Note Flight is one of the first, was the first online and really was the first like freemium model that came out. And so Note Flight's strengths right now are, you know, we are most people's, you know, we have some numbers that we think are there, but I won't kind of disclose them. But I think that we are most people's first notation. When people go to Google and say, I need free notation, and then I just share like that free NoteFlight account, we make sign up super easy. It's crazy because we had a freemium model before freemium was like everything. Like everything's freemium now, right? Get an app for free, use it. Then we're going to bug you to upgrade later. Like NoteFlight was doing that in 2008.
Was NoteFlight always browser-based, like online software?
Always.
Yeah, okay. That was another big difference between that and Sibelius and Finale in particular.
Absolutely. And it's pros and cons, right? Browser-based, the biggest advantage is once you're finished with something, you get to share a link to someone. It's like a Google Doc. In fact, NoteFlight had view, comment, or share, or view, comment, edit as the three options of sharing links before Google Docs came out with it.
Oh, that's cool.
Not that NoFlight invented something Google copied at all. I'm just saying, like, NoFlight's been sharing music online before Google Docs were sharing Google Docs online. It's crazy how old this is. It was built on Flash technology. Now it's completely all Flash. It's had to really reinvent itself through the technology updates. But that's the big thing. Like, it's a community where people can share music. Two or three people can look at it. You could, you know, refresh the page. You can see different updates. You can share. It's prime for education. And then, you know, iPads were the big thing for a while. And that was really the demise of Flash because Apple and Adobe couldn't get along.
So Apple was put, yeah.
It happens. And so, you know, Flash goes away. But then all of a sudden the Chromebook came out and like all schools are now using Chromebooks or simple Chromebook devices. Well, here we are, like we're built for Google Chrome. So that's been a huge, huge advantage. And that's why I think for most students, you know, Finale Sibelius, you can't download it to a Chromebook.
Got it.
And that's the challenge. So we've been very strong in that area. And then we built some very quick education features where teachers can share and students all get their own copy and they can turn in and things like that. So that's really what NoteFlight is, I think, sets NoteFlight apart. It's really, really educational, really easy, quick. That's where we're strongest. Full disclosure, on the flip side, there are people that still fear the cloud, right? I mean, I know you're probably, so we trust cloud. Everything's in the cloud these days, right?
Everything's in the cloud.
But there are still like, it's amazing. You know, my money is in the cloud. My bank is in the cloud, right? Like my very, very important critical things to my life are in the cloud. But it's funny how passionate people get about their music, right? And so one thing that we had developed a long time ago is like there's a NoteFlight file type. It's proprietary to NoteFlight, but you can download a .NoteFlight score and you can save it on your hard drive and you can save it forever. Because there are people that are like, it's in the cloud. What if the cloud breaks? Okay, well,
okay, yep.
You know, like there's that bit. It's really beautiful to think about music because people are so passionate about their music. Even if it's 8 bars that they wrote, like it's mine and I'm so afraid that my idea and my creativity is going to go away. So we had to do things along the way, like give people something to download. There's still people that think are a little weird about subscriptions. So we came up with a lifetime plan, you know, kind of like a perpetual license, like, there was a fear of like, well, if I pay this year and I don't pay next year, are you going to take all my music? And we never want to do that. You know, we actually never delete anything. We always, unless we're like asked to via GDPR, we always save it. So people say, oh my God, I actually deleted it. We can always recover. We're like super careful because people love music, man.
And so you've mentioned that you've got a freemium plan, which I've tested out, and you're right. It's super simple to use and the sharing is fantastic. You could shoot it over to someone that's compiling a book for you or that needs to play it or check it, whatever it is. Is there a limitation though to what you can do on freemium, on the free plan, I should say?
Yeah, that's kind of the name of the game, right? And it's funny, we're just talking about reevaluating these now to kind of, because I don't think we've really reevaluated it in a long time. But the main limitation on free is we give you 10 scores in the cloud. You can always delete and add more and then unarchive, don't delete this stuff. You get 10 scores. That's the real limitation. For a lot of people, they're just trying to jot down a couple of things. And they'll write it, print it, or download that NoteFlight file and save it, you know, and import it later if they need. But the 10 score limit, it's also a limit of like sounds, which is a license fee cost, you know, to us for the premium. And then like the major engraving formatting pieces is the real difference with free. The editor, as far as entering notes, is free. Like we did have that meeting of like, how do we draw the line? Like you can slur, but you can't accent unless you pay. Like, it's a weird line.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that'd be so messy and frustrating, though.
So the whole editor is really, I mean, I would say that the whole of the editor is there for free. It's the number of scores you can create. It's the formatting, the individual parts. You can't, like, print individual parts. So we try to, like, you know, we obviously have to pay our developers. So
absolutely,
we
yeah.
try to, like, meet that. But you can do a lot with free.
And so for the teachers listening, if they need a simple, quick, got to write something down and they don't want to do it on paper, they would have, and they're, you know, let's say a piano teacher or a trumpet teacher, or they would easily be able to do what they need to for free on NoteFlight. Those basic functionality is fine.
Absolutely. I do have to give my data privacy disclaimer that as a consumer site, when you sign up for your own email, you do have to be age 13 or older with parental consent to sign up. Otherwise, you can use NoteFlight Learn, which protects data for all students. So our education plan is also student data privacy in mind, right? Because when you register a student with NoteFlight Learn, we don't get their email. We really don't get any PII. So that's part of the education plan.
Well, that was a brilliant segue, John. Nicely done, because I wanted to talk about NoteFlight Learn. And I might just read what one of my members said. So Rebecca was on one of our Evolution mastermind calls, and she was talking about NoteFlight Learn, and I hadn't heard of it. So she said, because I was asking her, what was that thing that you were talking about in the meeting? She said, NoteFlight Learn is the name. Soundcheck is the software that allows you to test your student and they receive immediate feedback. So last year I used it to help a couple of students get a true sight reading test experience to help them prepare for their state test. And I just read that they added a video feature to Soundcheck, but she hadn't tried it yet. So you can create worksheets and templates and share them with specific students or your entire studio. And you can do group projects as well, record the parts in a score, playback. It listens to you. Tell us about this. I mean, this sounds super cool, particularly for the current online kind of situation that many teachers are finding themselves in.
That's phenomenal to hear customer can see all that value. I love it. That's what makes me happy. Yeah, we have been talking about doing a performance assessment piece for a while, and we were really close to, like, getting it going. Then the pandemic hit, and then we said, okay, now we really got to do it. And we just, like, got it out. And so we got this launched last summer, 2020. And Soundcheck is our, you know, assessment for teachers listening. It's a direct competitor to Smart Music. Soundcheck does three different, Soundcheck measures pitch and rhythm and gives, like, different colors and different error messages, but it directly, like, you know, relates to the performance. And so the question was, how do we marry performance assessment with notation? And we made the choice to make them as intertwined as possible, so that when you create something in NoteFlight, you press a button and magic happens. And then it turns into a sound check, and it's treated like another score in NoteFlight's world. So you have a notation score or a sound check score. And then once you're in sound check, you can hit record, you can play, it'll spit out feedback. You can hear your performance compared to the reference performance. And then it functions like every other NoteFlight score. Teachers can assign it, teachers can turn it in. It's the same functionality around it as far as doing assignments, integration with Google Classroom and other pieces. But it's the direct connection. You know, a lot of other people like, oh, you could do this. All you have to do is import music XML. Oh, my God. Importing music XML is a nightmare. No. I call it XML. Can I say that?
No, yeah, definitely. No one wants to be worrying about what XML is. You've just lost half your audience, John.
Yeah, like, and that's what, and I get it. Like, I'm no disrespect to any of our competitors, but I'm like, oh, no, you could use anything. Just use music. I'm like, well, hold on a second. It's not really true, right? Like, first of all of our content's licensed through Hal Leonard. Like, we're all in the up and up when it comes to rights. Like, NoteFlight, we are Hal Leonard. We're doing everything, like, above board as far as, like, our content libraries. Every time you open it in Soundcheck or this, we're paying rights holders based on every view. Like, all that's happening internally. But for us, it was creating something that was never before possible, right? The world doesn't need another performance assessment thing. They need performance assessment and notation. So they're linked. So once you, like, in that performance assessment and you get, like, a score of 99% or 100 on it, well, there's a little thing at the top that says, oh, here's the NoteFlight score this came from. You can go back. You can say, okay, let me take it up a step or let me add it. And you can create another one. You can, and then you can do different things with Soundcheck, like limit attempts, like give yourself one try, only or 10 tries or whatever. There's like an easy, medium, or hard level. Teachers can lock controls now, where some teachers are like, I want to set it up so students can only record twice and they have to take the best take. And they only can see, like, so teachers can set all the settings and hit lock and students get a locked version. But we wanted to always bring it back to notation, because what education is, and traditionally is, like, teacher knows things and teaches as a verb students. But in an online world, and I think what we're realizing is student autonomy and choice and creativity is so powerful. So I want to create a world where students can create a sight reading activity within certain parameters, right? Like 30 students create a sight reading, give it a fun name, and then they share it with a friend who then has to make a sound check out of it and get an 85 or above. And now the students are challenging each other and it's gamified and it's all in the same platform and you're just clicking buttons. That to me is super cool.
Mm. So for teachers listening, if you currently give your students sight reading exercises and you do them one-on-one with the student in a lesson, you could move that all potentially online and have them do these themselves. That's what we're saying, right? You could set up a sight singing or sight reading exercise for whatever instrument it is. The student gets it. They hit record. You can limit the recording numbers, the level of difficulty, hit record, and your software will actually assess whether they're singing in tune or playing the right notes, and then let you know what that is. And you could use this again and again for different levels of students, so you could build up a bank of these kind of assessments or challenges. Be great for exam students as well.
Yeah, saving everything. Everything's online and savable. So like once you do this 1 year, everything's saved for the next year. But you know, we teach a language by learning to speak it and learning to write it, right? And sometimes we teach music and we never teach students to write it. We spend a lot of time in traditional performance classes, like play this phrase this way. And we're going to spend 3 months learning how to play this. Like, it's like learning to read a book and like say these words this way. No, you don't have to know how to spell them. You don't have to know how to write them. You just have to know how to say them and get them to get louder and when it's softer, you know? And I think with NoteFly, I mean, it's, you know, there's so many things that can be done that we're not used to doing, that I think the thing I would always tell listeners is that think about what's now possible. Like instead of you as a teacher having to find a sight reading book or generate sight readings for the students, have them challenge each other. Like having a student write something that is one level above what they can play, or have the sixth graders try to trick the eighth graders, whatever it is. Like that's a teaching tool, right? Like suddenly that's writing and then reading at the same time.
Mm. Yeah. So you're really getting teachers to think not so much about us creating everything and writing the scores and things like that, but challenging your students to challenge other students. That's clever, I think, because you learn most by doing, right? By teaching back to whatever it is that you've learned. So, and kids do have that kind of fun, particularly when they know each other too. So I'm thinking, you know, this would work really well if a couple of students cross over because they're the subsequent students for a teacher in one day, so they always meet and say hi, so they would know each other. Or if you have workshops or group classes or whatever, I mean, group classes this is ideal for. So yeah, lots of potential there, John. You've really opened my eyes and hopefully the listeners' ears to the potential. You mentioned that a teacher can buy a multi-student license or something. So how does that work? So let's say as a teacher listening, maybe they're a home teacher, they've got a studio of 10 students. How would they use this and how would it work?
Yeah, right. So NoteFlight Learn starts with 10 users. It could be a teacher and 9 students, or 2 teachers and 8 students. We don't charge differently between teachers and students, but it's essentially $8 a user. That includes soundcheck, that includes all the HowlLearner content, that includes the whole platform. So they can scale up as high as they go. I mean, we have private studios that have 10 students that do that minimums, or we have entire school districts, 30,000 kids and everything in between. I mean, it just goes, you know, we can scale any size you need. And again, you can choose if you don't want the performance assessment, you can just get the notation. We let you like a la carte it. So if you want to get like just the notation part, that's like $2 a user. If you just want content, it's $3. Like we can break it down. We also recognize that a lot of like the second grader might not need performance assessment or content right now. So we have a K-12 district purchase. We can adjust it, right? But this is per user. The website's totally self-automated. Another thing we've had to do is make sure that if at any point in any day, if a teacher needs to make a change to their account to give access to students, they can do it on the website, even just click invoice me, because we had too many cases, especially like, you know, with the time difference in Australia. I can't be Sunday afternoon without my support staff working and a teacher's Monday morning trying to, oh, wait, I have 10 more kids than I thought in this class and I can't get them a license. Like, no, click the button, we'll invoice you, pay it in 30 days, we'll figure it out. But like everything has to be self-service. Otherwise, we're in trouble.
Yeah, got it. Well, we've seen a lot of new tech. This is just one item of that used and developed during the pandemic. There's more podcasts than ever. There's so much content out there and all that kind of stuff. But there's also that sense of Zoom fatigue and teachers keen to get back to face-to-face. We're now back in a lockdown here, so we've just gone back online. Half the world's open. Some of it's closed. It's a bit of a mess. But the tech does bring some new opportunities to reach more students as well. And so I wondered if you could talk about how you see the potential for music teachers with technology, given your experience and your current role.
Oh man, do you have another 6 hours? This is all I think about. I mean, truly, like with my courses in music ed tech, and like I'm always pushing people like think differently. Again, technology is an it's not something that plugs in or has a battery. It is an innovation that allows us to do something that was never before possible. And the biggest challenge we have, we all have, myself included, is the more experienced we get, I won't say older, but the more experienced we get, the more we're like, I know how to do this because I've been doing it a certain way. And then, oh, here's the new tech. Let me use it the way I've already done it. We saw this in the pandemic, right? Like the great virtual ensemble. I need to get all my kids to sing and play together on Zoom. Not going to happen. I'm going to make it work. We have to, because that's the only thing I know. It's like, well, or you can let the technology do. So I think a couple things in this topic. You have to understand the intended purpose for the technology. Like just let the technology do what it's supposed to do. Because anytime we get frustrated as teachers of like, I'm trying to use this doll to do this thing, I guarantee everyone listening, the next time you're frustrated with a piece of technology, I will bet you that you're trying to make it do something that you want it to do. And it's not really designed to do that thing. And you're trying to force it. And that's where frustration's happening. We're all guilty of it, right? How many people invent apps? I just want an app that does this thing for me in a way I want to process it in my brain. And, you know, so I think where we go with technology is we understand its uses. We look at like a sound trap for online digital editor workstation. Like, what is the intended purpose? Production, beat making, like just learn Soundtrap. Don't be like, I want to use Soundtrap to do a playing test the way I've always done it in class this certain way. Like take a beat and just understand what its intended purpose is. And then let organically you and your students will figure out where it evolves. So always approach technology, read the tutorials, take a minute to just open mind. What is this thing going to do that I'm not thinking of yet? It's the big start. And the second thing is, no matter how much you do that, and no matter how good you get at that, the students are better already from the word go.
Yeah.
So don't do this thing as a teacher. Like, we don't have to teach the tech. All I hear is, I can't implement this in my classroom because I don't have time to learn it. Well, do you know how to structure assignments? Do you know how to motivate your students? Great. Let them find technology to do stuff. Give them. They will figure it out. They will watch the tutorials. They will do it. You will always have students that figure it out. They can help. You compare them with others. Do not limit your students' abilities based on your own tech understanding, because we are always going to be behind our students with tech. Just create assignments and let them jump in and watch and learn from them.
Great advice. I see it all the time as a parent as well. I feel somewhat blessed in that I grew up with phones and technology. I my generation, but I, you know, my the generation above me, it's just so easy because kids just know how to get around things and use things, and it's super hard to catch up sometimes. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. Put the onus on the student to go, well, hey, this app is amazing. How could we use it? And or whatever it is, the approach that you use.
It's about creativity, right? Like that's the big thing. Like it's not about, we're not teaching the tech. It's about, we're getting students to create, which I think is super valuable. I mean, this blows my mind. We live in a society right now where students communicate by creating short videos synced to music and sharing them by, and then adding text and other, you know, sometimes dances and comedic sketches on top of that. Now I'm describing TikTok, but that is multimedia art, if I've ever heard of it, right? We live in a world where students outside of music class and outside of school choose to communicate through the blending of music and video and other text and media elements that they combine willingly and share them constantly. That's freaking awesome. And they're not doing it in music class. Why? Why? Because this is a music teacher's dream right now. Like, I'm not saying everyone get a ring light and start learning all the TikTok dances, but I'm saying, like, just think about technology as a tool for communicating and collaborating, and think about how kids could use that to engage with each other using music on their instrument with their voice or whatever. Like, it's an awesome time.
Yeah, it's amazing how, well, now YouTube's built-in shorts, Instagram stole TikTok's idea and created Reels. I mean, all of these platforms have this short-form video. But, you know, going back 20 years when we were trying to do this, it was impossible, even with powerful computers, to do this. And you'd be sitting there and aligning times and trying to import things. I mean, it is so, so easy now, which is why it's become so popular, I think. But I think you've given a good call to arms for teachers to wonder perhaps how they could use this, given how engaging it is and how much students love it and how easy the technology makes it. Could we use TikTok's kind of Reels in lessons in a way somehow? I don't know. That's the question for everyone to think about it. John, we're going to wrap things up, but I just wanted to finish with a bit more of an open question. You know, where do you see this industry heading? How is the technology going to impact music lessons in the future? Are we just going to have robot teachers sitting next to us and just be taught by YouTube, or how's it going to work?
No, yeah, it's a great question. I will say that, you know, had kind of conversation earlier today about this, that, you know, after thousands of years of learning music, I don't think we're ever going to replace that sort of like master craftsman apprentice relationship of learning music. Like, we all know learning an instrument or singing is passed down in that way. We have mentors, we have lessons like that. Technology, I think, will never replace that, but technology does allow those master craft persons and the mentors and the future, musicians to connect faster, to connect anywhere in the world, not just who happens to be in your town. It allows us to be able to watch a video of proper fingering style on guitar when I'm not next to my teacher. So I think all of these things, we need to use them all together to make learning happen consistently. The days of I go to my teacher, I do something for 30 minutes, they show me, and I go back for a week and shed and come back like, oh, you've developed these bad habits. Those are gone because my teacher can now assign me, watch this YouTube video. This person is the best posture. You know, like, I think using technology in combination with what we always do, it's not a threat. It's not either or. I do appreciate the robots taking over. That's all the fear. Like, if I take the technology, like, sound check's never going to replace a teacher. But when that kid is at home and doesn't realize they're on the wrong partial on trumpet and is beating their head against the wall, if that software can say, hey, you played this instead of that, they go, oh, I got it, and have more fun for 30 minutes. That's exactly what it should do. So I think we need to embrace it, and we need to embrace everything we've learned with technology and figure out how to keep the momentum going. A student doesn't have to stop learning when they leave class anymore. And I think that's where technology picks up. Some cool things on the horizon. We're working closely with Jack Tripp on the real audio connection, you know, milliseconds of latency.
Yeah.
We're working that's some phenomenal stuff. And we're working closely with them as distribution partners and also just really trying to, you know, help them succeed, because I think that's where it really unlocks, right? Zoom fatigue's horrible, but with something like Jack Tripp, everyone can unmute at the same time. We can talk at the same time. We can play ensembles, and it's there. And so I think that's going to be really cool. But again, it's about extending the classroom. We're not replacing. We're not saying the old way is bad. But let's just keep the momentum going. Learning music is freaking fun. Playing music is really fun. Creating music is really fun. I should not be only allowed to do that in my 30-minute lab time on Tuesday morning. Like, I should be able to do it anytime I want. Kids should be able to do it anytime they want. I should be able to log in and play a duet with my friend across town without being like, mom, can you drive to my friend's house so we can play duets? Like, no, like, plug in with Jack Tripp to do that. Compose something on NoFlight. God, I wish I had this song in a different key. Okay, we'll just transpose it on NoFlight. It takes a minute, you know, like, That's what gets me jazzed, as you can tell. So,
Ken, that's a great way to wrap things up. I think, as you say, we could talk about it and explore lots of these ideas for hours on end. But we'll wrap it up there. John, tell us, where do we find out information, firstly about NoFlight, and then also about you and your own work?
Right. So NoFlight, NoFlight.com. Everything's there, and everything's just free trials of NoFlight, NoFlight Premium 30-day trial, NoFlight Learn 60-day trial. Sign up, no credit card, just try it. All you'll get is some emails from us saying, please buy, and you can ignore those like you do every other email. So NoFlight.com. If you want to see more from me, I post a lot of my sessions and stuff on my own website. You can, and all my social media is there. It's johnmalinzak.com. Really easy to spell. Rolls off the tongue.
We'll put a link in the show notes if you want to check out John's site.
Yeah, we'll put a link there.
John, it's been an absolute pleasure having you with us today. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for all the hard work that you and your team are doing over at NoFlight and Hal Leonard.
Oh, always. Thank you so much, Tim. This is really, really a pleasure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed learning a little bit more about NoFlight and NoFlight Learn. As I said, there are heaps of different options these days online for music notation software, but as you can tell, NoFlight Learn does have some particular benefits, depending on what you want to do, of course, with your studio, but I would definitely go over, check it out, and see how it could be of benefit, particularly if you are teaching online and want to do some of those online tests or oral tests and things like that, because there's some great options there that NoFlight Learn can help you with. Next week on the podcast, we've got one of our Top Music Pro expert teachers. It's Melanie Bowes from the UK. She's our group teaching expert in our community, and we're absolutely delighted to have her on the podcast to share all of her wisdom. Make sure you check it out. That's in 1 week's time. In the meantime, I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to the Topcast from topmusic.co. I can't wait to speak to you again really, really soon. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.